The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article, in fact, does come from the Harvard Health Letter. This is for August 2020, and it's entitled, Five Internet Recommendations for Joint Pain. Do they work? People increasingly consult the internet about medical problems. If you're looking for approaches to relieve joint pain and inflammation caused by wear and tear, osteoarthritis, or an immune system attack such as occurs in rheumatoid arthritis, you may find methods that sound promising and even sensible. But will they work? Here is advice on five pain relief methods commonly touted on the internet. The first is music therapy. Listening to music can evoke powerful emotions to help people relax or heal, which is the basis of music therapy. Research has found that music therapy is associated with less anxiety before surgery or during chemotherapy and better functioning during physical rehabilitation. Will it help joint pain? Listening to music could provide an appealing distraction, so you might not focus as much on pain, stiffness, or physical limitations. Some studies have paired it with physical therapy, dancing, or other movement, and found some evidence of psychological benefit, including improved mood and reports of reduced pain, says Dr. Robert Schmerling, a rheumatologist with Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and a senior editor at Harvard Health Publishing. Sleep. Not getting enough sleep can have a big effect on pain. People feel pain more intensely when they don't sleep enough, Dr. Schmerling says, and significant joint pain can interfere with sleep, so it can create a vicious cycle. Inadequate sleep also increases your risk for obesity, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and even premature death. Will it help joint pain? By itself, getting more sleep probably won't reduce your joint pain, Dr. Schmerling says, but you should try to get between 7 and 9 hours of sleep, regardless of whether you have arthritis. Therapeutic massage. There are at least 80 different types of therapeutic massage. Will it help joint pain? Gently rubbing the joints may increase blood flow to the affected area and ease sore spots, but it won't last. Massage can make sore muscles, tendons, and joints feel better, at least temporarily, but it's not a standard treatment for arthritis, and it's not been proven to have an anti-inflammatory effect, Dr. Schmerling says. The more joint damage is present, the less I suspect massage might help. A high-fiber diet. Eating a high-fiber diet rich in vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes is associated with many health benefits, including better control of cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, and weight, lower risk for developing diabetes, and dying of cardiovascular disease, and less constipation. But will it help joint pain? One could speculate that perhaps a high-fiber diet can help with loss of excess weight, which can reduce osteoarthritis symptoms in weight-bearing joints. Or perhaps a high-fiber diet can change gut bacteria, and that might alter immune function as a condition such as rheumatoid arthritis, and might lead to improved symptoms. But otherwise, it's not clear that there's a biologically plausible way a high-fiber diet might help reduce joint pain, Dr. Schmerling says. However, a high-fiber diet is recommended for good digestive and overall health, so I endorse it, but not for any known benefit for arthritis. What about meditation? Meditating elicits the relaxation response, a well-studied physiologic change that can help lower your blood pressure, heart rate, breathing rate, oxygen consumption, adrenaline levels, and levels of stress hormone cortisol. But will it help joint pain? I know of no convincing evidence that meditating can reduce joint inflammation. However, it can serve as a way to focus on something other than pain, stiffness, or physical limitations, and it can lead to a reduction in perceived pain. There might be a benefit similar to listening to music. It might improve mood and reduce stress, Dr. Schmerling says. It's also possible meditation could lead to pain-relieving chemical changes in the brain, but this is not proven. A final word. You have nothing to lose by trying any of the methods we've outlined except the cost of massage or professional guidance. But be realistic about how these options might affect your arthritis. Make sure you've talked with your doctor about standard arthritis therapies, such as physical therapy, corticosteroid injections, and medication. The next article, also from the Harvard Health Letter of August 2020, is it time to consider using medical marijuana? Despite the hype and popularity of medical marijuana, you may not be sure if it's something to consider. You're right to be cautious. The use of marijuana to treat health problems is still being studied. We don't have all the answers about its risks and benefits. We do know that medical marijuana use among older adults is increasing. Older adults tend to use it for physical ailments. Number one is chronic pain. Insomnia is another big one. Older people have a hard time sleeping, and there aren't a lot of safe options, says Dr. Peter Grinspoon, a primary care physician with Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. What is medical marijuana? The term medical marijuana refers to either the dried flowers of the unprocessed marijuana plant, which contain hundreds of chemicals, or to two specific chemicals derived from marijuana that are known to have medicinal properties. One of the two chemicals, tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, produces a high. The other, cannabidiol, or CBD, does not produce any sort of high or cognitive impairment. The two chemicals separately or in varying combinations seem to decrease pain and help with anxiety and insomnia. They're also thought to be helpful in reducing symptoms of many other conditions, Dr. Grinspoon says. Those conditions include arthritis, migraines, dystonia, which is a muscle disorder, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Crohn's disease, fibromyalgia, and post-traumatic stress disorder. CBD in particular is known to lessen inflammation and to be helpful in controlling epileptic seizures, Dr. Grinspoon notes. This is not without risk, though. While medical marijuana appears to have many potential health benefits, it also has risks. THC and CBD can magnify or diminish the body levels of the medications you take. That could be dangerous with drugs that must be dosed carefully, with no room for error, such as the blood thinner warfarin, which is also called Coumadin. Taking THC by itself may cause an elevated heart rate, impaired coordination, confusion, disorientation, dizziness, fatigue, hunger, nausea, red eyes, drowsiness, dry mouth, elevated blood pressure, or a sudden drop in blood pressure upon standing. THC can also cause an anxiety attack if you take too high a dose and can affect short-term memory. If you have mild cognitive impairment, THC can make it worse and it can impair your judgment, Dr. Grinspoon says. The risks of THC dependence and addiction are debated. Heavy users may experience withdrawal symptoms if they suddenly stop using it. CBD doesn't cause a high, so you won't be sedated while using it, but you will feel more relaxed. CBD side effects can include nausea, fatigue, irritability, low blood pressure, lightheadedness, drowsiness, diarrhea, or upset stomach. It's not considered to be addictive. THC is a stronger drug that might be helpful in certain cases. Think of a veteran with severe pain from an injury who doesn't want to be on opiates, or someone with severe pain from advanced cancer, Dr. Grinspoon says. But THC also has the disadvantage of psychoactive effects. For that reason, Dr. Grinspoon typically prescribes something high in CBD with the lowest dose of THC possible. You'll get to the right dose, he says, but start low and go slow. Most of the side effects come from taking too much. If you're interested, medical marijuana is available in about 36 states. Most require you to have a diagnosed qualifying condition, and all require a doctor's referral so you can legally obtain the drug. If you live in a state where recreational marijuana use is legal, you could simply go to a dispensary and buy it. But Dr. Grinspoon urges you to talk with your doctor before using any kind of marijuana for treatment purposes. Not only to make sure it's safe for your health, but also to find out which chemical ratio you might need. Educate yourself as much as possible before you enter a dispensary, so you're not dependent on bud tenders or dispensary workers who mean well but don't have a medical background. Now I'm going to turn to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of September 2020. The first article is entitled Shoulder Problems, Advances in Surgical Care. After your diagnosis of a torn rotator cuff, you were instructed to treat it with rest, physical therapy, and pain medication. But now it's been several months of continued pain, and your doctor says you may want to consider surgery. You're not thrilled at that thought. You've heard a few stories over the years about painful long recoveries and months in a sling. However, shoulder surgery for rotator cuff injuries and other problems such as arthritis have come a long way. Common shoulder repair and replacement surgeries may only take an hour or so. Some can be performed as outpatients, and there are now less invasive surgical techniques with smaller incisions. The article has a picture of the rotator cuff and points out that the rotator cuff is made up of tendons and muscles, which surround the shoulder joint and holds the head of your upper arm in place. The tendons in the rotator cuff can tear partially or completely due to wear and tear, repetitive use, or injury. The article goes on, still, it will take months to fully restore strength and function with exercise and physical therapy. As with any surgery, it's important to weigh the benefits and risks of possible surgical solutions to common shoulder problems. Your shoulder is a complex meeting of muscles, tendons, and bone. The ball on top of your upper arm, the humerus bone, meets the socket in your shoulder blade, which is called the scapula. Cartilage covers the socket and the rounded top of the humerus so the ball and socket can glide easily with minimal friction. Your shoulder socket is shallow, and your rotator cuff surrounds the shoulder joint, helping to hold the ball in place. The rotator cuff consists of four muscles and the tendons that attach them to the humerus. The rotator cuff helps you raise your arm in the air and provides strength for activities that involve using your arms away from the body. The shoulder's ball and socket give it an impressive range of motion, but because of this mobility, the shoulder joint tends to be very easily injured. One common shoulder injury is a rotator cuff tear. Your rotator cuff can tear partially or completely. Imagine the rotator cuff tendons as ropes. A partial tear would be as though some of the fibers of the rope is frayed. A complete tear, also known as a full thickness tear, is like a hole has opened up in the rope, or the rope has been severed. Tears may develop gradually due to factors such as natural wear and tear and repetitive use. And this is called a chronic tear. As you age, your risk of rotator cuff injury increases. A tear can also develop quickly due to a single injury, such as falling on your shoulder or outstretched arm, an acute tear. A tear may not result in any symptoms. However, it can produce a dull ache in the shoulder, difficulty or pain when moving your arm certain ways, such as raising your arm over your head, or arm weakness. The pain may even disrupt your sleep. For most people, the initial treatment of chronic rotator cuff tears consists of conservative measures such as physical therapy, medication, and resting the affected shoulder. Steroid injections are another possibility. But if a tear doesn't respond to physical therapy after 6 to 8 weeks, Mayo Clinic experts say that surgery may be recommended to repair the rotator cuff. However, an acute, full-thickness tear is a special case. For most younger adults and some older adults, surgery is recommended more promptly to preserve shoulder function. If you are injured and experience a sudden loss of shoulder function or weakness, see a doctor right away. Another common shoulder problem is osteoarthritis. This occurs when the cartilage that lines the socket and the ball at the head of the humerus bone wears down over time. This can lead to pain and decreased range of motion. Surgery is generally only considered to treat arthritis when other, more conservative measures have not relieved pain and other symptoms. You may also experience shoulder arthritis along with the large rotator cuff tear, a condition known as rotator cuff arthropathy. One possible explanation for this is that when your rotator cuff has a large tear, it can't hold the ball portion of your joint in its proper place, and this leads to bone wear. Whether you have a torn rotator cuff, arthritis, or both, there are several ways a surgeon can treat damage to components of your shoulder. The first is tendon repair. A surgeon may treat a partial tendon tear by cleaning up the rough, torn tendon edges. In other cases, a surgeon can use stitches to reattach the tendon to the bone. In many cases, anchors are inserted into the bone to help hold the sutures in place. Tendon repair can be done as an open tendon repair. Now, an open tendon repair is done through one large incision. Open repair includes splitting the deltoid muscle in your upper arm in order to access and repair the tear. The surgeon may also use arthroscopic tendon repair. Arthroscopic tendon repair is done through small incisions using a tiny camera and surgical tools. The camera allows the surgeon to see inside the shoulder as he or she uses the tools to place sutures. A third option is called mini-open tendon repair. This procedure can be done through a smaller incision than the one used for an open procedure. However, the incisions are not as small as with arthroscopic tendon repair. The arm may be in a sling for 6 weeks after tendon repair surgery. Advances in pain management techniques may contribute to an easier recovery than in the past. Another surgical procedure is called anatomic total shoulder replacement. A shoulder replacement inserts a prosthetic ball and socket joint and can be used to treat arthritis. After an incision is made over the front of your shoulder, the upper arm bone is removed. A metal stem with a ball on the end is inserted into the humerus. An artificial socket is attached to the shoulder blade to allow smooth, painless movement. Another option is called reverse total shoulder arthroplasty. Reverse shoulder arthroplasty is a relatively recent innovation approved in the U.S. in the early 2000s. A reverse shoulder arthroplasty switches the shoulder's normal ball and socket structure. The artificial socket is implanted in your humerus bone, and the artificial ball is implanted in your shoulder blade. This may seem bizarre, but it's done for good reason. Sometimes the rotator cuff is so badly damaged that you can't fully raise your arm. But when the ball and socket are reversed, your body can instead use your deltoid muscle to raise your arm. This has revolutionized the ability to take care of people with non-repairable, massive rotator cuff tears, as well as those with rotator cuff arthropathy. A reverse shoulder replacement can be performed in as little as 1 hour, and can be done as an outpatient surgery or with just one night in the hospital. The arm may be in a sling for 2 to 6 weeks after surgery. Mayo Clinic experts say that recovery from a shoulder replacement, whether reverse or anatomic, is generally much easier than recovery from a knee replacement, and a replacement can bring substantial pain relief and improved function. The article has a picture, and the picture makes the point that a reverse shoulder arthroplasty switches the shoulder's normal ball and socket structure, which allows for better shoulder function when the rotator cuff is badly damaged. The article also includes a health tip, which is called planning for anesthesia. If you have an upcoming medical or surgical procedure requiring anesthesia, you'll likely be well served by a visit to your primary care doctor a couple of weeks ahead of the date. Your doctor can help optimize your health and pass along health information to your anesthesiologist, which he or she will use to select the types and amount of anesthetics needed. In addition, discuss the following with your anesthesiologist prior to your procedure or surgery. You should discuss all medications or supplements you take. Take your prescription and non-prescription drugs and supplements to your pre-surgical visit. Some may interfere with anesthesia or increase surgical risk, and your doctor may recommend that you temporarily stop taking certain medications. You should also discuss current or former smoking and secondhand smoke exposure. Smoking brings increased risks during and after surgery, so you're encouraged to stop smoking or avoid secondhand smoke prior to your surgery. You should discuss marijuana and alcohol use. These substances may interact with or affect the dosing of certain anesthetics. You should also talk about health conditions. Mention conditions involving the heart, brain, or lungs, as well as diseases such as diabetes and any history of heat stroke. General anesthesia may increase risk of complications related to obstructive sleep apnea. If you use a sleep apnea mask, ask about bringing it with you to the procedure. Anesthesia reactions experienced by you or a blood relative. These may include discussing any postoperative nausea and vomiting you've had, as well as a reaction to anesthesia called malignant hyperthermia. Here's a brief second opinion. My husband and I would like to do woodworking projects such as building dollhouses for our grandkids. He thinks we're fine just wearing our prescription eyeglasses, even with power tools. Should we be doing more to protect our eyes? Woodworking is a great activity for people of all ages. However, you're right to be concerned about eye safety with this hobby or with many others. Flying objects can cause serious injury, and sawdust can irritate the eyes and cause infection. Your regular glasses are better than nothing to help protect your eyes, but you should also consider options that provide stronger protection via sturdier materials and more complete coverage. Look for safety glasses that fit standards created by the American National Standards Institute. These are less likely to shatter and will provide fuller protection against more types of injury than regular glasses. Look for glasses that carry the ANSI logo or are labeled with Z87, the standard pertaining to eyewear within ANSI guidelines. Products that meet these standards are relatively easy to find when you know what to look for and are typically inexpensive. If you wear prescription glasses, you don't have to give up the improved sight they provide. Talk to your eye doctor about buying ANSI certified safety glasses that can be made to fit your prescription. Other options may be large enough to fit over your regular glasses. Stick-on magnifiers also can be added to the safety glasses. While you're thinking about workshop safety, don't forget to wear dust masks or another type of respirator to protect your lungs from sawdust or fumes, and have earmuffs or earplugs on hand to protect your hearing when you're generating a lot of noise, such as with a power saw. Well, we've come to the end of our episode. We've run out of time for this day's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and hearing impaired. I'm sorry, blind and print impaired. Health Issue is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.